Chocolate assortment you can give by Terry's of York.
Terry's of
Welcome to the Sound Podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello, Graham.
No Jan this week.
No.
Because we've given him the week off.
We have.
Yes.
We've basically given ourselves the week off, really, haven't we?
Well, we have, but we're actually in party mode, aren't we, really?
We are,
because yes. It's actually a special week for you, isn't it?
It is a pretty special week.
Yes.
It's not often that Palace take 1 point off Arsenal, and so it's a very special week.
Yes. Martin Atkinson did give you a lovely birthday present there, didn't he?
No, I think you'll find that penalty was 100% earned. And totally kosher, completely legal.
It was as kosher as Arsenal's second goal.
Well, let's not get into that. Granit Xhaka seemed to think it was a totally fine penalty. So, I mean, and he was there.
Yes,
he literally had the best seat for that.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I think it was a fair result at the end of the day.
Oh, it was totally a fair result at the end of the day. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any argument about that. You can argue the toss about how the goals were scored, but what you can't disagree with is that the point was a completely fair result.
Yeah,
two well matched teams.
I love the fact that goal line technology gave a completely bogus goal.
It was a complete bullshit goal. But I mean, you know, at the same time, without goal line technology, it is entirely possible that a linesman might even have given that.
Yes.
I don't think we can necessarily, on this occasion, point fingers. There are other instances that happened over the weekend where we can point and laugh at technology, but maybe not that.
No, VAR might have ripped all the fun out of that game, though.
Oh, VAR would have ruined that game. But VAR would have had a terrible time over that second Palace penalty.
Yeah.
But I still think that they would have upheld the referee's decision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, certainly. But hey, we celebrated on Saturday night though, didn't we, anyway?
We did indeed, yeah. We had a great time.
Yeah, and it was great seeing some lovely old faces there.
Yes, it was my 50th birthday party.
Well, this is what it was all about.
Yeah.
People came from far and wide, didn't
they? Indeed, yeah. And it was lovely to see so many happy and friendly faces.
Yes.
For once.
Yeah. And of course, you know, some friends couldn't make it because they live in other countries.
That's right, yeah. Although, in fairness, one friend couldn't make it because even though he lived in another country, he was going to come, but the poor chap had to have surgery.
Oh, wow.
From the Friday.
Oh,
he's absolutely fine. He sent me a picture of the stuff they took out of him.
Lovely.
Yeah, which I enjoyed immensely.
Yeah. Did you make a moon pig card out of it?
I suggested he could have made a beanbag out of them, which gives you perhaps an indication as to what they were. So, John, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, I really appreciate the picture, and I'm sorry you couldn't make it, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
It would have been great if Gary had come along as well, wouldn't it?
It would have been great, but it would have been amazing if Gary had come along, because it would have required a flight from Australia. And it would have been amazing if Chris Oakley had been able to come.
Yeah.
But he was all the way in New Zealand.
Yes, of course. And so these guys would have been.
And in fairness, I didn't actually invite him. Not because I didn't want him to come, but I thought, I'm not inviting a guy who lives in New Zealand to come to Wallingham for a couple of hours to have a couple of drinks. I mean, he's a close friend, but he must be thinking, you're having a laugh, mate, aren't you?
But, you know, there is an advantage of having friends in far-flung corners of the world.
Mm.
And that is when PR companies come up to you and say, yeah, you with the podcast there.
Dear name of podcast.
Name of podcast. Would you like to interview name of someone who's selling a book? And usually we say, yeah, fine, let's do that. And then they find other podcasts to go on.
Yeah, they realise, oh, hang on. Turns out Football Weekly will have him instead. Yeah. Sorry about that, name of podcast.
But this week they offered us an interview with David Squires.
Ah, but that's different.
That's different. Because David Squires, we've seen him on the way up, haven't we, really?
We have indeed.
Yeah, we knew when he was just putting stuff out on social media.
Yeah.
He's got a new book out.
And everyone laughs at his stuff.
And everyone laughs.
In the best possible way.
Yeah.
Not because it's rubbish, but because it's brilliant.
We like David Squire's stuff because we sort of come from the same sort of background, don't we, really, as producing content on the web's concerned. Because, listeners, before we started podcasting, well, we had the Football Fairground, which was our attempt to produce sensible football content. But before that, we did The Onion Bag for 6 years. About that, 5 6 years.
Yeah, 2003. But we went all the way through the 2004 Euros, 2006 World Cup.
That was our peak, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, which is when we peaked. That was when we were stupidly popular.
Yeah, that was when we were internet famous.
We were genuinely famous back then. And we were, like, coining in the page impressions.
We were, indeed. But we weren't coining in the coin.
We weren't coining in the coin, no.
Which is remarkable, because this is what David Squires is actually managing to do. Yeah. He's actually managing to make it work for him, which is really interesting. Yeah, so we had the opportunity to speak to David Squires. Now, we know that he's going to be on a lot of other podcasts at the moment, so you might be sick to death with the sound of his voice. I already listened to his appearance on The Outside Right earlier. But we thought, well, look, we can do things a bit differently. We don't have to have him on Skype. We don't have to get up in the middle of the night, or he doesn't have to get up in the middle of the night to talk to us. So, but what we could do is our very good friend Gary Andrews, who we do the Odd Job Pod with.
Mm-hmm.
And we have done it for years. He moved out to Sydney last year, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
And so we thought, well, hey, let's get in touch with Gary, see if he wants to do the interview for us. And, of course, Gary being Gary, is actually good friends with David Squires. And they are both season ticket holders at Sydney FC. And so they got together before the match at the weekend, and they had a chat for us. So without further ado, I think we should just let Gary take it away.
David Squires, welcome to The Sound of Football.
Hello.
We're obviously not recording it with the normal Sound of Football people because they're in London and we're in Sydney, so it must make quite a nice change for you not to be waking up in a totally different time zone to plug the book.
Usually there's a lot of fiddling about with Skype, sort of saying, can you hear me? Can you hear me? But we're less than a metre away. In fact, we're worryingly close. But
we are indeed. It's the rule of like radio or podcasting that either you can't see each other and you just rely on technology, or you're just crammed into a tiny little area.
Look, it's a hot day. Let's see what happens. Embrace it, man.
You are obviously the world-renowned Guardian football cartoonist.
I'm a cartoonist.
You're a cartoonist.
Yeah.
You are mostly known for Premier League cartoons, and given that the Premier League is normally on at about 3 a.m. in the morning, I've actually had a lot of people ask this when I mentioned that I know you. What on earth does he do for keeping hours?
Like anyone who lives in Australia and follows football in Europe, you acclimatise fairly quickly to the fact that you have to get up early or stay up late. During major tournaments, you can always spot the football fans because they will have sort of dark circles under their eyes and are making terrible mistakes at work. I always hope that there aren't many football supporting air traffic controllers, you know. I mean, you adjust. Say, like, during a major tournament, if there's a game on that everyone in Europe is watching in the evening, we're watching it at sort of 4 in the morning, but it then means that I can sit and write a cartoon about it. And then when people in Europe get up and read the cartoon, the people who don't know that I live here assume that I've been, like, one of Santa's elves sort of working through the night, whereas I'm actually, as you know, quite a lazy man. So so that nothing could be further from the truth. So it's advantageous in some regards, but yeah, it does do weird things for your sleeping patterns. Actually, during the last World Cup, it was a bit of a test of endurance, and by the end of it, my left eye was permanently weeping, and it was just from watching too much telly and drawing too much. It seems like such a trivial thing to complain about. Like my granddad was a coal miner, a war hero, and then here I am complaining about a sore eye from watching telly for a month. But
so when you've got the inevitable global breakdown of society that comes up, and you know, you survive and your grandchildren go, so what did you do during that period?
He drew cartoons about Jose Mourinho and moaned about it on podcasts. Noble.
That is. So what's the general process for you for a typical strip?
I usually keep notes throughout the week, stories that catch my eye, not just football stories. If there's something that lots of people are talking about on social media, or something amusing that I can try and put a football-related spin on. And then usually on a Sunday night, Monday morning, I'll sit down with those notes and try and write a loose script, and then I really improvise from that script. That's on Mondays and Tuesdays, and often I'll start out thinking, right, I'm definitely going to do this joke, and then I think of other things I'm going along, and that never makes it. And that's the general process for the Guardian stuff, both for the Premier League and the A-League. I also do stuff for L'Équipe in France and Elf-Freunde in Germany. I never know whether to say Elf-Freunde or 11 Freunde or 11 Friends.
I've done a fair bit of radio commentary in my time as well, and you're there when you're compiling your notes for the wrap-up at the end, and then all of a sudden something happens and you have to change the entire thing. You must get that. You must dread managerial sackings.
So I work on a Monday and I leave a couple of panels for Tuesday morning. I don't have to file until Tuesday afternoon, but I always leave a couple of panels spare in case a big story breaks on a Monday night our time. But there are occasions where a huge story will break and I have to start from scratch. So say last year or earlier this year, was Cyril Regis passed away. That was one where I thought, okay, this is huge. And it was a sort of an emotional moment for me because I remembered him vividly as a player. And, you know, when I first got into football in the 80s, he was someone who was like a real figure. And I decided, like, I need to scrap the stuff that I'd already written and focus on that. Monday night games are just awful for my work process. So if there's a big game, say for example it's Monday come and it's Tottenham versus Man City, in a normal week that would be a game that I would really focus on and maybe write a whole cartoon about because there's so much potential for incident there. But as it is, I'll just have to sort of wait and do the majority of the cartoon on Tuesday. Yeah, Monday night football isn't great for the process, but yeah, I always find a way around it.
So you'll get behind any fan protest that say stop it on a Monday night,
totally.
Just for your own sake.
Absolutely.
Of laziness.
I'm driven by selfishness and laziness. I mean, we've known each other for a little while and you must have got that impression from our general interaction. So yeah, totally. I'm behind every worldwide fan movement to ban Monday night football.
You heard it here first. Squires in Monday night slam shock.
Yeah.
As the headline might read. So we'll stick with The Guardian because that's obviously the one I think sort of most people know you from. And obviously as part of that, you've got your new book coming out, Gold of Straws, which contains a lot of The Guardian strips, favourite ones probably, some of them from over the years. Just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I mean, you've summed it up pretty much perfectly there. So I started in 2014 during these cartoons and doing them for The Guardian. And I realised that I had a big sort of back catalogue of them, so I was able to look through and pick some of my favourites, and that was quite a good process for me because I'm generally someone who, once I submit a cartoon, I try to forget about it. Any work I've done that's older than a fortnight, you know, I sort of look at it slightly dismissively. So it was a good process for me personally to look back at these cartoons and think, oh, maybe I'm not a complete fraud. So I hope this is what the publicist was hoping and the way that I would talk about the book.
So obviously, you sort of talk about the tortured artist process through there, the late nights, the drama,
and
it's just these ones were slightly less shit than the other
That's
ones.
That's right. These are the least shit cartoons I've done. It was good fun to do, and it goes right up to the recent World Cup. And the book's split into different subjects, different categories, so it's not completely just a chronological list of all the cartoons I've done. Hopefully there'll be some things in there, sort of stories that people have forgotten about. That's certainly what I found when I was looking back and thinking, what the hell was that joke about? And that gave me the, I suppose, the experience that the readers get sometimes when they look at my jokes and think, what is this reference? Often I think I've relied on the comments section beneath the cartoons for people to tell each other about what the references are they might not have got. Obviously, I don't have that luxury with the book, so there's text alongside the cartoons just reminding people that, you know, this is something that was happening on social media.
I was going to ask you whether you read the comments or not, because I always dive into them, and I'm a man who sometimes enters below the line with trepidation. But genuinely, it's kind of as much fun seeing people trying to spot the references in the cartoons as anything else.
I steer clear, to be honest. When I first started, I think I was slightly overwhelmed about doing work for a national newspaper. Before, I'd just been doing stuff on Twitter and putting it out on my own website and didn't really have much interaction with the internet. Yeah, I was slightly, like I say, overwhelmed at first, and I read a few comments and people weren't complimentary and I was really doubting myself. So I just decided, like, just focus on your work. It's supposed to be fun, and just don't overthink this stuff. And I've never really gone back to it. If there's any really bad comments, then, funnily enough, my dad always makes a point of letting me know. Well, I didn't like it this week. Oh, great, brilliant, thanks. But I'm aware that generally I get off a lot lighter than most. Most of the comments that come back to me are positive, so I can't whinge about it too much. Although I still do.
Any football journalist probably will do that as well, so you're not alone.
No.
In good company there.
Some people do engage in it. you know, will go down and defend themselves or will argue a certain point. But partly I'm too busy and I think my self-confidence is too thin to go down and have my own neurosis confirmed by some git on the internet. So I tend to stay clear.
Yeah, football is inherently a very ridiculous sport at heart. There's some things which just could go on that are absolutely ridiculous. Do you ever look at it and go, you know what, there is no point me doing a cartoon this week because the satire just writes itself. Satire is dead with football.
Yeah, I found that with, and we're coming up to that time of year around sort of Poppygate time, you know, and there's always something that happens. I remember last year I had drawn a cartoon that imagined someone turning up to a match in a full bodysuit covered with poppies. And then a week later, someone at Leicester City did exactly that. I think Brighton as well. Yeah, and I'm already thinking about that time of year again. So people sort of expect me to do a cartoon on this now. And I saw that in Salisbury, they've made a Christmas tree of poppies. So I made a note of that. So yeah, you're right. Sometimes there are things that are just beyond satire in football, in politics, in just in life. We live in slightly strange times.
I was going to touch on the politics, actually, because a lot of your strips, you know, you can read it just as a football fan, but there is quite a political undercurrent that goes through. And I'm guessing that's sort of quite deliberate on your part. Yeah. How much do you think about engaging with the politics of there, especially back in the UK when you're drawing cartoons?
I don't think that football lives, you know, in this chasm that isn't touched by politics. So there are things about, you know, Brexit, Trump, whatever, that frustrate me as a human in the world, and it's really, I use my Guardian cartoons as a way to express that. I'm lucky that none of my editors have ever said, you know, this is too political. And to be honest, some of those cartoons have just been purely political with a bit of football tacked on. And I know that isn't always received warmly by readers. But for me, it's, like I say, just a way of expressing what I feel, and it makes me feel a bit better.
Has there ever been anything that you put into a cartoon that you would have loved to have seen there but has been sadly ripped out of by the editors? Obviously, they do it for a very, very good reason.
They do. There's nothing that I've ever written politically that they've taken out. Sometimes the legal team come back and say, well, that's libelous, so you know, you'll get sued if you say that. And I think there's often a bit of back and forth with that. I'm aware that the editorial team at The Guardian certainly tried to fight my corner on a lot of things when it comes to these discussions. I've had it reported back that sometimes some of the other guys will overhear a conversation where the sports editor's trying to defend one of my jokes, and if it's something completely ridiculous, like they're saying, no, it's a penis, it's covered in poppies or something, like, you know. So to be a fly on the wall there would be quite good fun. But the only one that I remember being really cheesed off about was I did a cartoon about a day in the life of Peter Drury, and it finished with him in bed with his wife commentating with the lights off, and then the voice of Jim Beglin appears in the corner, and then the lights go on, and Drury does his classic line, Mrs. Drury doesn't know where to look, Jim Beglin doesn't know where to look, and then Jim Beglin is smiling and says, Jim Beglin knows where to look. And then they made me take that out. They said that you can't imply that Jim Beglin receives any kind of gratification from watching Mr. and Mrs. Drury make beautiful music. And I was, oh, come on. And they made me change it. And yeah, looking back, that's probably fair enough.
It appeals to me, but then I have a very childish sense of humour. So
well,
I'm the least good arbiter of taste on that kind of thing. Obviously, it's not just The Guardian that you write for. You've got L'Équipe, and as you say, Leben Freunde, or Elfstein Freunde, or El Freunde, or whatever you want to call it. How difficult is it? I know you relatively well, and I'm pretty confident that whilst you might have some linguistic skills, you're not fluent in the finer nuances of German and French.
The German guy who I work with is Uli Hess, and he wrote the book Tor about German football.
Yeah, fantastic book.
Yeah, and he's brilliant, and he has spent a lot of time in England, so he gets my sense of humour, and he gets the point I'm trying to make. And also at L'Équipe, same sort of thing. I'm really lucky to have a great relationship with the people I work with, and they help me out. I think sometimes with the French translation, I'll look at it and think, is that what I was trying to say? I'm not sure, but I think you know your audience probably better than I do. But I think generally the tone of the cartoons comes across, and I can still make them funny, hopefully, with the drawings and the way that I illustrate the people and the facial expressions and the body movements and that sort of thing.
Well, you might not be fluent in French or German, might be improving, but you're definitely fluent in Swindonian.
It's been a long time as well, you know. Yeah.
Swindon is where you're from. It's your team. Are you ever tempted to just kind of try and sneak in a reference to Jan Åge Fjørtoft at any point?
I put a page in about it in my last book. In an average season, I managed to sneak in about 5 subtle references to Swindon, whether it be digs at former players or certain clubs. But yeah, when I do sneak in a Swindon reference, it usually gets spotted by my fellow fans. I've been threatening my editor at The Guardian for a while that I'm going to just do a whole cartoon about Swindon one of these days, because they're in a real mess. And again, you know, I've got a bit to get off my chest there. It's the 50th anniversary this year, or actually it'll be next March, of Swindon beating Arsenal in the League Cup final. So maybe for a Carabao Cup special, I'll do something on that.
Beats certainly having to talk about Tim Sherwood as your director of football.
Yeah, do you know, I only discovered this recently. I listened to a fantastic Swindon Town podcast called Loath Strangers, where interviews with former Swindon players or personalities, and there was an interview with Sam Morshead, who was a local journalist at the time, from when Paolo Di Canio was manager through to a couple of years ago under the current regime. And he revealed that shortly before Swindon's playoff final against Preston in 2015, Swindon's problem was they let in too many goals. And so to counter that, in the lead up to that playoff final, the chairman, Lee Power, took the team against the manager's wishes, presumably, to a 2-day tactics symposium at Tim Sherwood's house. So he wasn't anything to do with the club at the time. And the focus was purely on attacking football. And, of course, Swindon then lose the final 4-0. They're dreadful. And I'd never heard that story. I was listening to it when I was walking the dog, and I just, in the middle of a dog park, just fucking hell. What a disgrace.
Do you reckon they've got a complimentary gilet off the back of it as well?
Maybe. Like,
I went to this tactics workshop and all I got was this stupid gilet.
Given Swindon's history of making bad deals, I would be surprised if they managed to secure such a sweet deal as a free gilet.
It's probably
mad, isn't it?
It's absolutely nuts. From the sounds of it, you could probably get work with the Adelaide Crows at the moment. I'll let any listeners who actually into AFL get that reference in the common way of a David Squires cartoon. You do actually, though, have a little bit of experience from Swindon, obviously, there. But before you moved over to Australia and in your formative years, you obviously had a bit of experience at a Premier League club as well.
I worked at West Ham, yeah. I worked at West Ham for a couple of years. I worked at Swindon Town after I left uni, which didn't give me a realistic idea about what working life would be like, because it was mostly dossing around. Swindon weren't quite in the dire straits they are now, but they were towards the bottom of the Championship. And, you know, on a Tuesday afternoon in February when they're 16th, you're not getting many people knocking down the door to buy tickets for, you know, say if they haven't got a home game for another 2 weeks. So there was just a lot of messing around. And then after I left, I decided that if I wanted to pursue an illustration career, I should probably live in London. And I had a friend who was moving there, so I moved down there with him. And I thought, okay, well, obviously I'm not going to make it straight away, so I need a part-time job. And I wrote to it. It was like a story of like a, sound like Craig Johnson or something, right into every club saying, take a chance on me. I did that, but just asking if they had a job in the ticket office. Maybe I should have been more ambitious and say, have you got a place for a sort of creative midfielder who, you know, does a right on 5-a-side on a Wednesday night? I could have been Paolo Futre or... yeah, I worked at West Ham for a couple of years. And I was a terrible employee, and they weren't great employers either, to be fair. Like ticket office staff absolutely get the rough end of the deal. If you love a football club, don't work for it. That would be my advice. Not that I love West Ham, I couldn't give a shit, but if I was sort of indifferent to them before, I loathed them by the time I left that job. I've said before, I think I said this in a cartoon, that I was the worst employee at that club at that time, and bearing in mind at that time they were also employing Neil Ruddock, so yeah.
You're now down under, and we're both in Sydney at the moment. And yeah, you also do a weekly cartoon for the A-League as well, which is incredibly niche, but you've been doing it for a while, and you've probably had a few people wander into that cartoon who think you're getting a regular Premier League cartoon and,
every week,
and then go, what every the week. Hell's this? So in light of that, in the fact that you've inadvertently been educating people about the A-League, who's done more to publicise it globally, you or Usain Bolt?
Oh, God, Usain Bolt. Jeez, no one knows who I am. The story about Usain Bolt broke about him scoring a couple of goals in that friendly the other week. You know, I just saw my timeline. Suddenly everyone is talking about the A-League and about the Central Coast Mariners and wanting to learn more. And now I'm looking at my phone thinking, oh, now you fuckers are interested. Like every Friday morning I look at my phone and you're all furious that I'm writing about Australian football. So, yeah, Usain Bolt. I don't think he's going to stick around very long, though.
No. I'm quite worried he's not going to make it as a professional footballer, to be honest.
Yeah, he's. I think he's done already, at least here. Maybe he should have taken that offer in that Maltese club, I think.
It's a bizarre time for Australian football, because when his second goal had a touch of, I've forgotten the guy's name, but that speed skater who won gold for Australia. Steve Bradbury. Because he literally, everybody crashed into him beforehand and he just had a little tapping.
Stephen Bradbury is a motivational speaker and always talks about how it wasn't about that race, it was about the lifetime training to get to that point. So maybe, you know, if things don't work out for you, saying, he can do that. He can do the, you know, corporate conference circuit, go around, talk about that goal. So, yeah, his life was building to that point. So his world record 100 metres was about scoring from from a metre out. He could have fired it in.
With the A-League, because it probably says a little bit about the A-League, there's a lot of off-the-field turmoil, and we won't get too much into politics because it's quite dull for even people who live over in Australia as well. But the chairman of the FFA has been deposed. So if you were going to fix Australian football and parachuted you in, the chair of the FFA.
Imagine.
You've got all this power, and you could probably do one thing. What would you try and do to improve? Well, improve is probably the operative word there.
I would introduce music for substitutions, corners, free kicks. I have no idea. It's so bizarre, Australian football.
What's
and you have kind of like no sort of sense of it until you move here and you get into it a little bit and then you just realise it's nuts. There's nothing else like it.
What is the kind of some of the main differences that you've picked up on? Because you've been here actually a lot longer than I have. Yeah. I still have a little bit of rose-tinted love for it because I'm just grateful to be watching live football.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I am as well. And one of the things I was surprised about when I got here was the depth of feeling about football in Australia. I'd always assumed before that it was footballing wasteland, you know, but it's not the case. You talk to a lot of people, most of them follow a team, and the A-League doesn't quite have the same backing, but it's just such a complex sporting environment, especially with football. It's still viewed as a minority sport. It's viewed, I think, as a foreign sport. So that's why you get people who supporters and administrators from other sports codes really attack football, you know. And I think there's definitely an element of xenophobia there. And as a result, football fans are really protective of their patch and fight back like verbally quite aggressively, and it's such a complex mix. Is that what you've found here?
Yeah, I mean, I discovered hashtag soccer Twitter, which is yes. S-O-K-K-A-H, then Twitter obviously after it, and it's it is a kind of strange mix because you've obviously got that heritage that does come from the immigration, which yes. is where the game was brought in for. And I found that the first time I ever went to an A-League game, I just found it, I enjoyed it, but I found the experience quite odd because it was like quite family friendly, but then you had these people like, went to watch Sydney FC, and you had these people kind of doing European ultra style chants with the guy at the megaphone at the front, but it was a bit odd because it's, you've got a much smaller amount than say the yellow wall at the Westfalen at Dortmund. It's kind of an odd mixture of cultures in there. Yeah. It's entertaining and fascinating and a lot of depth to it. But yeah, it takes a bit of getting your head around in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, right. And there are times where I still find it sort of quite baffling as well. And often in a good way. I've been lucky with the A-League cartoons. People have responded positively to it. When I first started working on them with Guardian Australia, you know, I was speaking to the sports editor there. And we were sort of saying, well, let's see how it goes. We're not sure. We weren't sure how people respond to an outside voice. I'm not Australian. I've been here now for nearly 10 years, but at the time I'd only been here for four or five years. And although I was supportive of the sport and I'm a fan of the A-League, we weren't sure how it would be received. But I hope that people who read them understand that when I'm writing about football, be it Australian football, British football, it does come from a place of love. You know, I'm passionate about the game. I love it. It can be infuriating and it can make you question every decision in your life that has led you to the point where you're watching Sydney FC versus Adelaide United, or you know, Swindon versus Cambridge United, or whoever, you know. But it does come from a place of tragic love.
Yes, that's probably a good way of putting it, and I'd probably say the same. The one thing I've actually wondered about Australian football and the cartoons that you do, it's obviously English football is 92 clubs, it's non-league. For a small country, it's got a lot of people involved in the game. Obviously, there's not quite so many people involved in Australia. Are you ever worried that some of the people that you draw in the Australian cartoons, that you might bump into them at some point and have an awkward conversation with them?
It has happened.
It has?
Yeah. Just before the World Cup, Optus, who's the, for UK listeners, they're the telecommunications company in Australia that had the rights to the World Cup. You had to watch it through a streaming service. And for their launch, I got invited to their media launch. And I thought, well, free drink, free food. I knew a couple of people going, so I went along to this bar in Sydney. And it's only when I got in there, I realised I was suddenly stood next to David Gallop from Football Federation Australia.
He's a CEO.
He's the CEO, and he's a recurring character in the cartoons. So if UK listeners think that I draw a lot about Jose Mourinho, David Gallup's probably the other person I can draw from memory without having to sort of look up an image on Google. And suddenly just found myself stood next to him. Thankfully, I wasn't introduced, but then I look around and I could see, as you say, it's a pretty small environment, you know. So I look around and I thought, okay, yeah, there's Tony Popovich, there's Shane Smeltz, there's him and him and him and her, and these are all people I've drawn. And I was relieved that none of them knew who I was, because it was like a nightmare, a living nightmare, or an anxiety dream, or, you know, like you're doing an exam without your pants on and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's really the only time I've ever come into sort of face-to-face contact with anyone that I've drawn.
Yeah, it's probably a mildly terrifying experience. Every now and then I'd had somebody, you know, go, I've listened to your podcast or I've read your article. And I'm just like, my first reaction is, why would you do that?
Yeah, I feel exactly the same. I find it odd that anyone would want to talk to me about the cartoons. And when I sort of read positive comments or people sort of talking in very glowing terms about my work, always remember that it's the work, it's not me. No one knows me personally.
Well, we're nearly out of time. There's one final question I was going to ask you that I'm wondering if it's going to make your job a lot more difficult this year when Jose Mourinho is inevitably eventually sacked from United, given how much mileage you've already got and when we're, a third of the way through the season.
I know. I can't stop. I'm addicted. I mentioned that in the new book. There's actually a chapter in the book that's out based on Jose Mourinho cartoons, because he does provide a lot of content. And that's before this season. It took me quite a while to get happy with my likeness of him. Probably only last season where I settled on a likeness that was consistent. And part of that is because his face has changed a bit as well, you know, sort of collapsing a little bit as his sort of managerial prowess does.
It's like a kind of reverse Dorian Gray.
Yeah, maybe there's a picture of him somewhere in the main stand at Old Trafford of him running down the touchline for Porto. And each week I sort of tell myself, don't draw Jose again. Like last weekend, I thought, okay, I've drawn so much about Jose Mourinho. There's got to be more going on. And then he gets into a fight with Chelsea assistant manager. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's another Jose cartoon. So hopefully he behaves himself this over the next weekend and, you know, I can be a bit more economical with my Jose cartoons. But I do like drawing him as an emo teenager.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I'm as a man who can remember that era well, I love a lot of the references to My Chemical Romance. I think we might have got a bit of Fall Out Boy in there as well.
I'm having to get more obscure because I don't want to repeat any bands I've used before. So I think I used Dashboard Confessional this week.
Nice.
And it's a little bit after my time, you know, I wasn't really into any of those bands, but and they were sort of on my radar, but it wasn't my thing. Although I did see Rival Schools live once, but I'm not sure they really count as really emo. But so yeah, the longer it goes on, the longer he stays in charge. You know, I'm really working through that Wikipedia page of emo pop bands.
It's the one time where you might really have to turn to Twitter and say, guys, please help me out here.
Yeah, well, I did find myself legitimately last week on Pitchfork looking for what did Dashboard Confessional's last album get on Pitchfork? And I was delighted to see it got panned. I was like, yes, I can use that.
I mean, that must be a party. She comes down and it's like, what are you doing, David? I'm on Pitchfork researching Dashboard Confessional.
She's got no interest.
But just before we go, one last plug, one last chat. Just remind everybody about the book that you've got coming out.
Oh, thanks. It's called Goalless Draws and it's out on the 1st of November.
Brilliant. And look forward to the collaboration with Gerald Way coming up soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which will be brilliant. So thank you very much, David Squires. You are listening to a Sound of Football special from sunny Sydney, where I've been playing the Gabriel Clark role. And I'll hand you back to Graham, Terry and Jan and Sound of Football headquarters in Whyteleafe.
Well, that was a lovely chat, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was great. I really enjoyed listening to that.
Yeah, thanks a lot, David. And thanks a lot, Gary, for doing that. That was really insightful. I thought that was actually very interesting. Hopefully you haven't heard too much of that before on other podcasts. So it's almost made me see A-League in a new light. But then...
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting what you were saying about how mad it was.
Yeah.
Because you don't get that at all from here. Because I watch a lot of A-League, actually, in fairness, to be fair. But it is on BT Sport, and it is just the Foxtel stuff.
Yeah.
All the narrative and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't follow the A-League media or anything like that.
No.
The only A-League person I think I actually follow is probably Gary.
Yeah.
These days.
And he's only been out there a year.
So it was interesting to see that it is a bit of a basket case of a league. And it's reassuring as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's an emotional game and Australians are very emotional when it comes to sport.
Mm.
And so it's good to see the two fusing together in such a madcap way.
Yeah, but will any Australian games get into this weekend's box set where it's very Premier League heavy on Saturday? There's a few games that are coming up that really could show up teams what they're really like, I think, on Saturday. Isn't that right, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Man United have got to go to Bournemouth, and that is not an easy place to go.
No, Bournemouth are doing really well.
Going great guns, as they say, and Man United doing okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're never really quite certain what you're going to see when you go there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. There's a real chance of a bloody nose there. That is well worth watching.
Yeah, Arsenal hosting Liverpool as well in probably the game of the weekend. Yeah. If Arsenal have got defenders, then they might be able to stem the tide there, but that's going to be a cracking game.
That is going to be a cracking game. I mean, that is a blue ribbon fixture.
I mean,
and it always is, right throughout the ages, Arsenal Liverpool has always been something of a classic, and so this will be no different. And really be tough after what happened on Saturday, on Sunday rather. Tough questions now for Unai Emery's Arsenal. I think Jurgen Klopp would have watched that game and thought, he'll be stroking his beard thinking, I think I see opportunities here, so we shall see.
And Premier League deciding to flex their muscles a bit by putting on a football match opposite Strictly. I mean, what the hell are they doing there?
That's bold.
That is bold.
That is a bold call. They're going to get, I don't want to get all corporate TV, but they're going to get pasted. Believe it or not, there are TV channels, national TV channels, who put on a test card during Strictly. And it says, you've selected the wrong channel. You want number one.
Yeah,
they literally give up.
Well, the Premier League have decided to put Wolves against Tottenham on Saturday night.
Because there's no limit to Sky's arrogance.
That's what they like. But that should actually be quite a decent game.
Yes.
I won't be allowed to watch it. But if you want to find out what we do put in our box set so you can watch it, get it along to tinylister.com/soundoffootball. Sign up and it will be in your inbox on Friday. But that's all we got time for. As I say, it's a short one for us this week. So hopefully a nice easy edit. Yeah, off to the tavern now. And So from me, Graham Sibley, and from birthday boy Terry Fallon, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Lovely.